Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Jaws the Shark is a British singer, songwriter, and musician who has swiftly ascended through the ranks to become a rising star within the industry, and he has developed a sound that seamlessly blends different styles together. His breakthrough came when he received significant support from the likes of BBC Radio 6, BBC Radio 1, and Radio X, as well as featuring on a number of high-profile playlists on popular streaming services such as Spotify and Amazon Music. In 2022, Jaws the Shark released Another Day in Paradise, his debut EP, through popular tastemaker label Nice Swan Records. Building upon the success of his first EP, he signed with influential label So Recordings for his highly anticipated follow-up release. The second offering, a self-titled 4-track EP, further solidified his status as one to watch. In 2023, saw Jaws the Shark unveil Cream, a 5-track EP recorded at the esteemed Vada Recording Studios. Notably, Cream garnered significant acclaim from BBC Introducing, a platform renowned for showcasing emerging talent, as well as receiving airplay from influential BBC Radio 1 presenters such as Jack Saunders, Nels Hilton, and Alex Holcomb. Jaws the Shark debut album Wasteland was released via So Recordings in 2024 to glowing reviews, with popular tastemaker magazine Kerrang saying, "When you enter Jaws the Shark's wasteland, it feels as if you found a world in which punk is the way it's supposed to be." Jaws the Shark is ready to leave an indelible mark on the music industry and solidify his place as one of the fastest rising stars of the future. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Jaws the Shark. So where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Firstly, thank you for having me. I am in London, in the UK. And I'm pretty good. Thank you. Yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Okay, now I have to ask, why and where does the name Jaws the Shark come from?
There's a TV show that I've liked since I was a kid. It was called Peep Show. And it's one of those ones that I've just watched for pretty much my entire adult life. And it's something that I use to like help go to sleep to. You know, everyone's got those shows that are just really super relaxing. That's one of them. And there's a scene in that basically where someone's saying that, you know, the name of the shark isn't actually Jaws. And he goes, "Here, of course it is. Here comes Jaws, Jaws the Shark." And I was just looking for a band name at that particular moment in time when I just happened to watch that episode. And I've always been a bit of a shark nerd since I was a kid, to be honest. And I always knew I wanted it to be somehow related to that.
Okay.
Initially, I was thinking of something along the lines of Chum. You know how like you try to track sharks with
yes.
blood and that. That's where it come from.
Let's rewind. From what age did you feel cool? You want to be creating music in the music space, be producing or be in that world. And how did that journey progress to where we are?
I don't know if I've ever felt cool. To start things off, I started in music. When I was about, I think actually, in fact, you know what? I joined my first band on my 17th birthday. I remember it because it was my birthday. Well, that's when I went to my first ever practice anyway. So that was sort of a defining moment for me because I just started to go to college. I just left school. I just started to go to college, started meeting all these new people and whatnot. And then met a group of guys that were like, "I'm in a band." And I was like, "Oh, that sounds cool. I want to do that." And I just started from there, really. And then I think I went on my first tour when I was 18. I must have just turned 18. So I was only just that old enough to do it. And that was it, really, for me. And then I sort of sat waiting patiently for something to happen that never did. And that band then disbanded a few years later and everyone moved up to London and left me in the town that I grew up in. That's how I saw it, anyway. So there's nothing really there for me. So I thought, well, if everyone's gone, I'm going to go as well. And I moved up to the city, started working in music, the sort of back end. I started working with a lot of other bands and musicians, sort of selling them merch and things like that and touring still. didn't then end up doing anything musical for a while myself because it's I was just always on the road with other people. And then eventually, when I got some downtime, that's when it all kind of kicked off for me. And I just realized I had all this time, and there was just an outpouring of all this creative stuff I'd had locked away for a couple of years. And it all just sort of flowed out of me. And I was like, okay, well, this is the time to start up a musical project again.
You mentioned this creativeness or creativity. I create my own words all the time. This creativity that was pouring out of you. So from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Is it always a soul, as in you do it by yourself project? What is your creative process?
It usually starts with something in my head, whether I'm on a bus, in a car, whatever, on the tube here in London, or just hearing any random noise that will set off like a light bulb in my head. And it's often like a noise actually. And then I'll come up with sort of a musical idea, and then I'll hum a melody or something along to that. And then I'll record it in my phone. So the voice notes in my phone are crazy, but I'm pretty sure every musicians are like it's that's usually sort of how that starts. Or and then I'll sit down and sort of once I get home and to a laptop and stuff, I'll sit down and progress it from that. Other times I'll sit down and try and create one of those songs that I've thought about. So I listen back to a voice note, and then I'll just end up coming up with something completely different whilst I'm trying to figure out the musical side of it. And then it will just spark something else, and it will snowball from there. So, but usually, in terms of the writing process, it's me that will write everything, demo it, and then I sort of program in, most of the stuff like drums, keys, whatever, synth, and then I'll record in bass, guitar, vocals, all the rest of it, everything that I have. I just do it from home usually. Well, sometimes I'll take it to the other guys that I used to play live with. Sometimes not. Sometimes it will get to a point where I'm recording, whether it's an EP or an album or something, and then just like we'll play it live for the first time. We'll try and recreate it live for the first time about 2 weeks before going into the studio. And then, so sometimes it's not even really played live before it gets to the point of being recorded properly.
Tell us about your latest project or what's coming up in the next few months.
Yeah, so my debut album, which I'm really excited about. I never really, when I started this project a few years ago, I never really even intended to get to a point where I'll have an album out. It was more creating a project and having a musical outlet because I wanted to do that and to stop myself from being bored. And it so happened to have led to a point where people fortunately want to keep hearing stuff and I can keep writing it. And then I've had a record label want to keep putting it out. So, yeah, it got to a point where I put two EPs out previously on this label, and then I had a big collection of songs that I wanted to put onto a more substantial body of work in this album. So,
What's the album called? And let's unpack some of the songs.
yeah, the album is called Wasteland, and which is sort of a view I have of. Sometimes of the country that I find myself living in, which just seems to be getting harder and harder to exist in a as a budding musician trying to make a living in that world. Just things for not only for myself but for everyone. They just seem to have deteriorated to a point of staleness lately, which will hopefully change soon. Over here, but yeah, anyway, I just kind of it felt quite fitting to call it that. At that moment in time, it's also one of the names of a song that's on that record. So it's 10 tracks in total, all very different. I would say I wanted to make an album that sort of ebbed and flowed and had variation to it, which if I find a lot of things at the moment I listen to that people sort of stick to a genre and then just sort of go with that and. That's never really been the kind of music that I've made or listened to. So I kind of just wanted it to be a big celebration of everything that I am able to create musically.
So when you are going in to record these songs, you mentioned they're different genres or different feelings. Did you know going in, okay, this song is going to be this genre that song is going to be that? Or was it like your creative process with your voice notes that you listened to it and it sparked an idea and led to something else?
I had a pretty good idea of what they would come out like or how they would sound. When I demo things, when I eventually I'll get the voice notes, I'll sit down on my laptop and I'll record demo versions of those songs. So I'll have a pretty complete version of the song before I then go into the studio to do it fully and properly with the producer and things. So when I'm demoing, I'll usually try and make them of pretty high quality anyway, as best that I can do. Yeah. To my ability anyway. So I kind of know, like, for example, if there's an orchestral part in there, which there are in a few of these songs, I'll sort of record strings and violins or horns or trumpets and things like that. So I know that that song is going to be sort of a rocky song, but with those orchestral moments, or some of them would just be like an acoustic-y ballad, or some of them would be a real like fast-paced indie rock song, or one of them would be, you know, just a straight up rock riff or something like that. So it sort of, it varies in that sense, but I have a pretty good idea of what they're going to come out like before going in. But there's always some curveballs along the way. Once you get into a studio and you've got so many shiny new toys to play with in there, you know, like it's just grand pianos and 80 different kinds of guitars, loads of different keyboards, loads of pedals. So some, it always happens where you're like, it comes out of nowhere and you add a whole part to a song that wasn't previously there.
So are you able to play all those instruments and are you self-taught?
The only thing I can't really play well, I could craft drums together easily, but I can program them pretty well to make them sound like they would be just a normal regular drummer in there doing it. But that's probably the only one thing I wouldn't be able to play, you know, as well as I would like to. A lot of those other things I would be able to play because I don't really ever then record a overly complex version of them in my songs. Okay. It's just to add layers, you know.
Yes,
really.
Yes.
So I can play everything that I need to play to as high of an ability as it needs to be played in my songs.
Okay. Understood. So you slightly referenced this a little bit earlier. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange, and thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the experience of receiving, the unpacking, the listening from song one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are on a massive comeback. Last year alone in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. And CDs are also on the upward trajectory and cassettes. And it's actually the younger people that are buying them, not the older people. But we've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What is your observations of where we're at the moment with the musical landscape?
It's kind of crazy at the moment, really, because I still think people are trying to figure out how to combat digital music streaming sites and things like that, because I know that vinyl sales are the highest, like you said, and that's amazing. And that is great. And I did realize that CDs were back on the rise again, which again, I think is an amazing thing. But I think that is just due to the fact that people like to have the physical product in their hand. And I'm one of those people as well. I think it's just, it's hard because there's more music out there now than there ever has been. And that, whilst it being amazing, it also changes and taints people's views of how it's created and how difficult it is to put it out there in the first place. And because people pay so little for, you know, some of the streaming sites, they get this whole like wealth of music just available to them. The value of it goes down in their own minds because they don't have to pay for it. Therefore it affects, I think, then everything. It affects ticketing to live shows and things like that. I've seen that there's been a real decrease in people going to shows for smaller acts, whereas there's been a huge increase in the demand for, you know, the stadium acts, Taylor Swift and things like that. People were just buying those left, right, center, and they're the most expensive they've ever been. Whereas it's because I think people consume music so differently these days and it's so readily available, they don't think they need to buy tickets for these smaller acts or anything like that. So I think that is a direct result of the streaming sites.
It makes sense because the thing is that They think, well, you know, the bigger artists, they're willing to pay. But if you're a smaller artist, you know what? I've got this stuff on the streaming. It's just uploaded. It's easy, 1, 2, 3, a couple of pounds a month. And it shouldn't be like that, because you guys work hard from creating one song to an album, the artwork, the design, the studio rental, the equipment. It's huge. And I don't think a lot of the people who are absorbing and consuming music are actually cognizant of all of that.
No, I agree. I don't think they would have the first idea of what goes into it, really, in that sense. Like, there's a huge financial burden that is put on creators. And like you say, there's more to it than just simply sitting down and writing a song. And I say simply sitting down and writing a song is not even that easy anyway. That takes up hours and hours of your day sometimes when you're trying to create something. And it's not, you know, if anyone could just do it, everyone would do it. It's not that easy in itself, let alone the time it takes, whilst you're also trying to do everything else to just get along and survive around it, you know, especially when you live in a city like I think, you know, a lot of people do, like I do, a very expensive one. When you're trying to do all this time, you just don't have enough of it. Money, you don't have enough of it. It's a struggle, but, you know, something keeps you coming back and doing it. The love of it, which hopefully will never die. But
exactly. You have to keep on pushing on. I love this game. I know if I had to ask this question in 2 minutes, 20 years, 8 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Okay. So there is a band that I've been listening to a lot lately. They have a record out called Final Summer, and the band's called Cloud Nothings, and they've got a song on that called I Get Along, which I've really been listening to quite a lot lately. There's a song called My Honesty by a band called Beam Stella. I was also singing on my way back in my head when I got off the tube. A Change Is Gonna Come with Sam Cooke. Oh yeah, I also had, I don't know if I'd, maybe I would sit down and play it. I had Lose Control by Teddy Swims in my head as well. It was just a proper singer. And then I also would probably play Say It Ain't So by Weezer.
Okay, nice mix. Some of them are on my list, some of them aren't, so I'll add those couple. So what is the difference for you performing at a festival like compared to touring for yourself and then also opening for other artists? Naturally, you bring the same energy to the performance. But what are the differences of the three?
I think opening is a difficult one because it can really depend on, you know, the suitability of the person that you're playing with. Sometimes that gets that spot on and it's just right, and the crowd that are there are really receptive of it. But sometimes you end up on a tour with some like super fans that love this one particular act. They're not really that receptive of then anyone else playing on the bill, you know, sort of. So that it could be a tough one. It could be tough to sort of win that crowd round, but those are often, they can be some of the most enjoyable gigs if you do win them round, but they can also be some of the worst if you don't. But I've been quite lucky in that sense from my experience of doing that. I've always been quite well fitted. You know, a lot of the time you would then go on social media afterwards, you see your follower count go up, you'll get people messaging you, you know, you go hang out at your merch stand afterwards, and that's great. Let me move on to festivals. Festivals, I think, I see those as an opportunity, especially if you're playing. There's so many people that just wander into tents or whatever that won't have seen you or get dragged along by their friends and things like that. And I see that those as huge opportunities to play in front of a large number of people and really do as well as you can. And also just the general vibes that are at festivals are generally speaking quite good. Everyone's there for the same reason that you are ultimately, and that is just to have fun. So I always try and do exactly that and just take it for what it is, really, and just try and have fun, not take it too seriously. Mm. Just do what it is that I do and enjoy it. With headline shows, those are the ones that I generally would feel the most sort of anxiety going into, but that's just because I have to put the most amount of planning into those from a preparation side, from building a set list that's going to flow, because generally you play a longer set anyway, so it'd be like an hour or an hour and 15 or something. So that all kind of matters, especially if you use anything digital like backing track or anything. You've kind of got to build a lot of stuff around that, which takes hours and hours and hours. Then the rehearsal time and everything, it's all building up to the headline show or shows. And then you play like, an important city where all your management are, label are, booking agent are. So there's a lot of pressure on those ones to perform. And I don't suffer too badly from nerves, fortunately, but I think they're healthy. But yeah, those are different. Headline shows are different because there's a lot more pressure on it, and the ticket sales matter. If you're not selling as many tickets as they'd like, that burden is kind of put upon you, etc. Whereas with festivals and with support slots and things, it doesn't really matter. It's not your shows. There's less pressure. So I'd say that's the big difference between it all, is just the pressure that are on headline shows versus the other two.
Spoken to a lot of artists, and I've asked a number of them the same question. And you've given me a new understanding and perspective. So thank you for that. It's quite an interesting discussion and conversation. I'm normally that guy that's right in front. I'm jamming, I'm dancing. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe a couple of videos, a couple of photos, and I put my phone away. I notice people around me oftentimes have their cell phones out for 60, 70, 80% of the time, posting, tweeting, photoing, whatever they're doing. From the person on the stage receiving that, do you feel that takes away from the energy of the interaction and connection with the audience? Which just where society is at the moment.
I do think it's just where society is at the moment. I know that there are a lot of acts, people like Jack White, for example, is one that springs to mind. They don't allow people to take their phones in to shows like that because they think it takes away from the experience, which I completely agree with as well. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I do feel like you're taking something that people rely upon away from them in that instance. And a lot of people, they do like to look back and see what sort of night they had. A lot of people hold memories within their phone. I do the same sometimes. Like I'll be on a plane and have no phone signal or something, and I'll just start looking back through my videos and photos and things like that. And that's, a good way of doing it. And so I think a lot of people do it for a genuine reason. A lot of people do it just because they want to post about something. But generally, I feel like if someone's got their phone out and they're recording you, you're probably doing something right. Either that or horrendously wrong.
Yes.
But I think you're generally doing something right. Of course, like you would prefer for them to sort of be more present and in the moment. But do you know what? Apart from anything else, seeing some of those videos as soon as you come off stage, and or when you're in the van or whatever, or tour bus traveling back afterwards, and you've got that downtime to relax and decompress, going through some of those videos on Instagram and things can actually be quite beneficial too. Because there can be sometimes when you think, oh, I didn't nail that part in the show. And then you look back at a video of that exact moment, you're like, actually, do you know what? That didn't sound anywhere near as bad as I thought it did, which is a bit of a booster. And without that existing, I wouldn't know that. So there are definite positives that you can take from all of that, and people having their phones and things, just from a personal perspective.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. So, as a final message, what would you like to say?
Well, if you're listening, thank you for tuning in. As I say, that my debut record, Wasteland, is out. If you're into bands like Nirvana, The Hives, Pixies, Weezer, anything like that, I think you'll probably enjoy it. Smashing Pumpkins, stuff like that, I think you'll probably enjoy it. But apart from anything else, yeah, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.